Good evening, Truth Seekers. Good Friday evening. Malloy here on Novem Radio. Glad you could stop by. I hope you're going to stick around for a while. Well, what is this story about the McCains? Cindy McCain lied about adopting her child. First, she said that Mother Teresa herself had asked Cindy McCain to adopt two children at Mother Teresa's orphanage back in 1991. Turns out that McCain never met or even spoke with Mother Teresa on that trip, Cindy McCain. The Christian Science Monitor apparently discovered this, and once confronted by the Christian Science Monitor about the lie, the McCain campaign quickly erased the claims from the website, you know, like it did with Cindy McCain's family recipes, which were proved to be lifted verbatim from the Food Network. Well, what is wrong with people? What are wrong with? I mean, do they honestly believe, any politician, I don't care if it's Democrat or Republican, just like John Edwards, did John Edwards really, really think that his affair and possible fathering of a child with his girlfriend, that somehow that would not, nobody would ever hear about it? And Cindy McCain really, really believed that she could pull off a lie? Why? Because Mother Teresa's dead? Is that it? What is wrong with these people? Or was this back when she was, doing drugs? Maybe it was. I don't know. On a trip, this is from the Sunday Telegraph, February of this year. It was on a trip to Bangladesh in 1991 that she, Cindy McCain, adopted Bridget. On Friday, she recounted to voters in Missouri and Illinois how Mother Teresa persuaded her to return home with the child. Quote, "I just could not let her go. The only thing was I had not told my husband. When I got back, he asked me where would she go, and I said I thought she could come to our house." End quote. And then in the Digital Journal, June 15th of this year, it says, "Mrs. McCain has been involved in charity work, clearing landmines from that to starting a charity to help children who need facial reconstruction. She has been inspired by her daughter that she adopted from Bangladesh, who needed extreme care after being born with a cleft palate. The adoption was prompted by Mother Teresa herself, who implored Cindy to adopt the little girl. She did so without first consulting John McCain because of her compassion for the girl and her respect for Mother Teresa." I don't know. Why do we get caught in stuff like this? Why do I pay any attention to this at all? Is it surprising to find out? This is called padding your resume. What's the resume for a first lady who is, a wealthy heiress to a beer distributorship started by a father who had connections to the mafia? I mean, there's a big enough resume for you right there. So you soften it up. Well, Mother Teresa told me to adopt a child. Or John Edwards. I just can't. Bill Clinton. What did Clinton think? I realize that's ancient history. Jesus, that's last century. But what did Clinton think? That he, of all people, could have his little oral affair with Monica Lewinsky and nobody would ever know? I mean, God. What did Larry Craig think? You know, he's in a public bathroom in Minneapolis playing footsies with an undercover cop, trying to get a little, action going there. What did he think? Did he think, oh, well, I can get away with this? What is wrong with these people? What is wrong with them? So the Cindy McCain thing, I've gotten several emails about this, and that's the reason I'm bringing it up, because to me it's a real yawner. Okay, Cindy McCain lied. So what? So what? So Bill Clinton. So George Bush has lied his whole damn life. Practically every right-wing talk radio host in America is a liar. You know, okay. Oh, God. Have you been following the Olympics? Every once in a while during the day, I will tune in. Now that the swimming competition is essentially over, I've kind of lost interest. And the gymnastics competition. You know, Chinese are cool, man. They use 12-year-olds. 12-year-old gymnasts. Hello, what's your name? I don't know. I'm too little to have a name. How old are you? I don't know. 10? They won't tell me. They won't tell me how old I am. I'm just a tiny little person. Whew. Let's just say, you know, it's so reminiscent. Remember the Olympics back in, like, the 70s and 80s when... you know, the Czechoslovakian, there was a country called Czechoslovakia back then. The Czechoslovakian gymnasts would show up, or the weightlifters would show up, and, you know, hi, what's your name?
Alice.
Alice?
Yeah.
You're here for the women's weightlifting?
Yeah.
Okay. Remember that? You remember that. And now they take, when did the Chinese take these children? Do they go into the womb at like 8 months and cut them out and then put them in a gymnast school? Jump, little fetus. Brrr. Jump. Spin around on the bar. But I'm not even born yet. Be quiet, little fetus. Jump, 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 jump. You're going to be a big Olympic star. The reason I asked about the Olympics, the original concept, and okay, original concept, come on, Malloy, it's over 2,000 years ago, forget it. Okay, but the original concept was individual excellence. Have you noticed how every single newscast in America, I don't know how they do this in the rest of the world, but every single newscast in America, when they start talking about the Olympics, at some point in the story, if not the lead to the story, at least it's what they close with, what country has the most medals? Oh, yeah, well, we're in first place now, if you count all the medals. But the Chinese are in first place if you count just the gold. Oh, God. Every time I see that, it just turns my stomach. I hate the Olympics anyway. When was it that they decided that amateur sports was so passe? Let's make it professional. So anybody, you know, anybody. Jesus, I don't know why they don't have who's got the best baseball team average in America right now. I don't even know that either because I gave up on professional sports. I gave up on professional sports a long time ago. But why not just take the whole the best team in the major leagues and send them to the Olympics? You know, this whole thing about the Olympics, it's supposed to be oh boy. You talk about tilting at windmills. I don't know, it just pisses me off. That's all. It just makes me angry. The corporate sponsorship. How many corporations are sponsoring the Olympics? And but the medal thing, every single day, 2, 3, 4, 8, 20, 30, 50 times a day, whenever it's mentioned on network news or cable news or whatever, it's got to be a medal count. You know, forget the individual, unless it's Michael Phelps or you know, there's a handful of people whose names are out there. And usually that's in the context, if it's an American athlete, it's in the context of what they're doing for America, not what they're doing for themselves, or for the United States, I should say. If it's some other athlete from Jamaica or, you know, pick a country, it's the individual whose name is displayed. They may say, so-and-so from the Czech Republic, or so-and-so from Russia, or so-and-so from the UK, or Great Britain, or I guess it's Great Britain. No, I don't know. See, I don't even know. I've given up on sports, professional sports. And all sports now are pretty much professional, right? You know, once you get above Little League. But it's an irritation. Hey, who's the number one country today? Oh, boy. Well, we may be aggressors who torture people, but by God, we got the most medals. 21 past the hour. Do any of you youngsters remember Tommy Smith and John Carlos? Do you? That was a very interesting Olympics, 1968, the Summer Olympics. Was it the Summer Olympics or was it just the Olympics? No, it was the Summer Olympics, I think. Were we doing split Olympics back then? I guess so. But they were the runners who gave the black-fisted Black Power salute when they stood on the pedestals to take number one and number two. It was in the I forget what race it was, but they were both sprinters. And I do remember the third guy. I think he was either Australian or New Zealand, one of the two. And he wore something, a badge to show, or a patch or something that showed sympathy with Carlos and Smith for what they were, what that raised fist represented. To me, it was so appropriate. So appropriate. It was very moving, that iconic photograph. I put that photograph, in at least in my mind, it has as much impact to me. Now, I realize this is not true with the Chinese, but it has as much impact to me as the picture of the Chinese man standing in front of the line of tanks during the horror of the Tiananmen Square massacre, just prior to the massacre. When was that, 89? Where the Chinese man who appeared to have a newspaper under his arm and a briefcase, remember that? And a white shirt with his sleeves rolled up, and he stood in front of a line of tanks and stopped them cold. Remember, the tank turned to the right, and the man danced over to his left to block the tank. It was unreal. Well, that photograph, not the video. The video was even more moving. But the photograph of the Chinese man standing in front of the line of tanks, and that photograph, that was an iconic photo to me, and the one of Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 68 Olympics with their heads bowed and their fists up. It was just... Speaking of the Olympics, got an email here from Lauren up in Canada. She said, I hate the Olympics. As far as Canada goes, they didn't even win a single medal the first week, so I guess we're a bunch of losers. My theory is that the countries that have the best steroid hiding abilities, namely the U.S., win the most medals. Years ago, I remember our Ben Johnson getting caught and getting his medal taken back and given to Carl Lewis, who was definitely taking steroids. That was when I totally stop paying attention. I've never and will never think that an athlete can be a hero. They contribute nothing to society, just have extraordinary ability in using a particular set of muscles, which does nothing for their fellow man. Yeah, well, that's a good point. That's a good point. Oh, and last night, Kurt in Minnesota sent this to me. I guess he sent it today. It had to do with the program last night. When I was talking about, or not talking, screaming at Democrats and cursing and using vile language, and which really generated a lot of interesting emails today. I'm starting again. Founding members with Nova M saying they're canceling their membership forever because my attitude towards Democrats, and especially my attitude toward Barack Obama. Okay, you know, that's cool, but. You know, I got a lot of that also when Hillary and Obama were still in the running together, and I was busting up on Senator Clinton. You know, people say, well, I'm canceling my Founders Club membership. To hell with you. Only they didn't say to hell with you. It was more like, you know, bad words. Anyway, so Kurt wrote last night. Or today, vis-a-vis last night's program, where I was talking about, well, you know, everybody says, well, we got to have Obama because McCain, look who he's going to appoint, the Supreme Court, yada, yada, yada. First of all, he doesn't appoint, he nominates. And second of all, the really, 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 really bad Supreme Court justices in the past 25 years are there because of Democrats. And I mentioned Clarence Thomas. And what I forgot to mention was that because I wasn't paying attention, that the Democrats were in control of the Senate when Clarence Thomas was nominated by George Herbert Walker Bush. And it was Joe Biden, who was the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee at the time, who shepherded Biden and who's the freak from Utah? Who's that guy, Senator? You know who I mean, Kathy. Who is that? Oh, God. Orrin Hatch. Thank you. It was Hatch and Biden. I think Hatch was the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. It was Joe Biden who gave us Clarence Thomas. Joe Biden. And, you know, if anybody can find one single thing, one ruling that Clarence Thomas has made that falls even within 1,000 yards of logic, common sense, decency, humanity, humility, or the U.S. Constitution, or any combination thereof, send me an email. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. What's become of me? I got a 0018, a Martin guitar in the backseat of the car. Hey, I am leaving Mississippi with the radio.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Now, actually, crank them up and open the windows. It's 25 before the hour. All right, somebody sent me the link here to a little more information. I had no idea. I'm going to share this with you. When Tommy Smith won the 200-meter race in a then-world record time of 19.83 seconds, Australia's Peter Norman was second with a time of 20.06 seconds, and John Carlos, American, came in third place with 20.10 seconds. After the race was completed, the three went to collect their medals at the podium. The two American athletes received their medals shoeless, but wearing black socks to represent black poverty. Smith wore a black scarf around his neck to represent black pride. Carlos had his track suit top unzipped to show solidarity with all blue-collar workers in America. Furthermore, Carlos wore beads, which he described, quote, were for those individuals that were lynched or killed that no one said a prayer for, that were hanged and tarred. It was for those thrown off the side of the boats in the Middle Passage, end quote. All three athletes wore Olympic Project for Human Rights badges, OPHR badges, after the Australian expressed sympathy with their ideals. Sociologist Harry Edwards, the founder of OPHR, had urged black athletes to boycott the games. Reportedly, the actions of Smith and Carlos were inspired by Harry Edwards' arguments. A little more here. Both Americans intended on bringing black gloves to the event, but Carlos forgot his, leaving them in the Olympic Village. It was the Australian, Peter Norman, who suggested that Carlos wear Smith's left-handed glove, this being the reason behind Carlos raising his left hand as opposed to his right, differing from the traditional black power salute. Oh, well, there you go. When the Star-Spangled Banner played, Smith and Carlos delivered the salute with heads bowed, a gesture which became front-page news around the world. As they left the podium, they were booed by the crowd. Smith later said, quote, if I win, I'm an American, not a black American. But if I did something bad, then they would say I'm a Negro. We are black, and we are proud of being black. Black America will understand what we did tonight, end quote. And the International Olympic Committee President Avery Brundage, at the time an American, deemed a domestic political statement such as this unfit for the apolitical international forum the Olympic Games were supposed to be. In an immediate response to their actions, he ordered Smith and Carlos suspended from the U.S. team and banned from the Olympic Village. When the U.S. Olympic Committee refused, Brundage threatened to ban the entire U.S. track team. This threat led to the two athletes being expelled from the Games. And, of course, 4 years later, we don't even need to get into what happened 4 years later in Munich with the slaughter of Israeli athletes. Anyway, John Carlos and Tommy Smith and Norman the Australian, there are certain moments where a statement is being made, a political statement is being made that will stay with me forever. The Buddhist monk, it was at 63, who in protest of the Diem government, this is before Diem was assassinated, was it 62? It was also before Kennedy was assassinated, but the Buddhist monk who went to the steps of the South Vietnamese parliament building and doused himself in gasoline, set himself on fire. That picture. The picture of the little Vietnamese girl running down the road, all her clothes burned off of her after being napalmed. You know, those photographs that stay with you forever, forever and ever. Greg in Des Moines writes, Mike, if New Orleans was punished for being sinful and faggish, as some religious leaders stated, then Florida's three-time bashing by Hurricane Fay must surely be payback from our Lord and Savior. Who was in office while the sins mounted? Jeb Bush. Yeah, you know, when weather conditions can be attributed to attitudes or sexual orientation or belief, you know, whatever, I think there's no question that violent storms like this can be attributed to human activity, but that's called global heating, global climate change, not whether or not Joe and John are dating. It's so weird, isn't it? Isn't everything weird? Everything weird, you feel weird? McCain, I don't know. This is weird. Back in May, the Admiral Mike Mullen, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, published a letter to uniformed soldiers warning that, quote, the U.S. military must remain apolitical at all times, end quote. And I guess he did that because, it's real important that they become remain apolitical, but it was clear to Admiral Mullen, I would imagine, that there would be efforts, as there have been by Republicans, to politicize the military constantly. They never stop. And I think Admiral Mullen might have been warning the troops, look, it's going to happen again this year, so you gotta just, you know, understand what your role is. Your role is totally apolitical. Well, 5 days later, McCain was forced to publicly apologize for using a picture of himself with General David Petraeus in campaign fundraising materials. He said, it won't happen again. My friends, it won't happen again. It won't happen again. But I think it was yesterday or the day before, the McCain campaign once again politicized the military and General Petraeus, who's now the Central Command Chief, by floating the idea of asking Petraeus to be McCain's vice presidential pick. And this is how it was put out. People close to the campaign also floated a wild card choice, General David Petraeus, the top American commander in Iraq. They said it was not beyond the realm of possibility that Mr. McCain would ask him to join the ticket. Although General Petraeus has no experience in elective government and has said repeatedly that he is not interested in the vice presidency, the advisor said the campaign was putting forth his name in part in a bid for attention. Oh, man. Bill Kristol, the Nazi bastard who, for some reason, is writing a weekly column at the New York Times now, has been for the past few months. Bill Kristol has championed Petraeus as a Republican vice presidential pick. Unfortunately for McCain, though, Petraeus said he would refuse to ever run for office. So what we have here is Cindy McCain is a liar. In addition to coming from a family of gangsters, she's an absolute liar, complete, absolute liar. John McCain is a complete bumbling fool who has no respect for any boundaries anywhere. It doesn't make any difference to him. And for those who say, well, Mike, Cindy McCain is not running for president, oh, give me a break, for God's sake. Stop. Of course she's not running for president. But she is the wife of the man who would like to be president. And I would imagine that Cindy McCain has John McCain's ear, the part that is not clouded up with cancers that are growing out of his cheek, but she still has part of his ear. And you can imagine what she's saying, John, when you're elected president, get a bill passed that declares the mafia legal because, you know, dad is still, well, you know. This is pretty weird. And then we have Susan Eisenhower, the granddaughter of Dwight David. I'm sure you saw this today. She has a letter entitled Reflections on Leaving the Party. She writes, this is all over the place, "I've decided I can no longer be a registered Republican. For the first time in my life, I announced my support for a Democratic candidate for the presidency in February of this year. This was not an endorsement of the Democratic platform, nor was it a slap in the face to the Republican Party. It was an expression of support specifically for Senator Barack Obama. I'd always intended to go back to party ranks after the election and work with my many dedicated friends and colleagues to help reshape the GOP, especially in the foreign policy arena. But I now know I will be more effective focusing on our national and international problems than I will be in trying to reinvigorate a political organization that has already consumed nearly all of its moderates. And now, as the party threatens to trivialize what promised to be a serious debate on our future direction, it will alienate many young people who might have come into party ranks. My decision came at the end of last week when it was demonstrated to the nation that McCain and this Bush White House have learned little in the last 5 years. They mishandled what became a crisis in the caucuses, and this has undermined U.S. national security. At the same time, the McCain camp appears to be comfortable with running an unworthy, Karl Rove-style political campaign. Will the McCain operation and its sponsors do anything to win? This week, I changed my registration from Republican to Independent. The two political parties, as they exist today, and the partisanship that they foster, reflect the many fights of the Cold War, the Vietnam era, the post-Cold War, and the 9/11 periods. Today, we're in a different place altogether, where our security as a nation is challenged not just from abroad, but also close to home. The energy, health care, and financial crises threaten our national prosperity and well-being just as surely as any confrontation overseas or any attack by radical terrorists." And she goes on and on, and then she says, "As an independent, I will now feel comfortable supporting people of any political party who reflect those core values." She mentions those in a paragraph above. "It was not easy taking this step, since politics, like religion, is something learned on the knee of one's parents and grandparents, and like anything else inherited, it is embedded in one's own identity. This makes leaving the Republican Party even harder. But there will be some joy for me in my new status, since I will be able to speak for myself, and not as a member of a party that has, sadly, lost its way." Well, Ms. Eisenhower, so has the Democratic Party. So the people who have been emailing me with the kind of cheap hysterics about my positions on the Democratic Party, maybe you could follow Susan Eisenhower's lead. I realize she's a Republican, but not anymore, not any longer. And what about what's his name? The mayor of New York. Oh, another blank. God, this is going to be a bad night. Who used to be a Democrat and decided how that he wanted to get elected, so he became a Republican. So anyway, that's a project for the weekend. Tear up your voter registration card if it lists party affiliation and go register as independent. Right?
I will step right in it.
Bloomberg.
Before I'd vote for Bill Bennett. They'll take over the world if we let them. They'd like to take over the world. I'm not.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Here we are together. It's about 9 before the hour. All right, let's do some phone calls. Coming up after the break, something that Pat Buchanan has written regarding McCain and McCain's principal foreign policy advisor. And we talked about this during the week, but Pat Buchanan, okay, so he's a Nazi, I understand. But he's our Nazi. So I want to share it with you. But right now, let's do some phone calls. Pat is calling from Oklahoma City, listening on Sirius. Hey, Pat.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I want to tell you that I support you 100% on your attitude about Barack Obama. I agree with you. I am not thoroughly satisfied with Barack Obama, but I'm voting for the party. I cannot and will not take a chance on voting for a third party and that vote being, you know, canceling Barack Obama and going to McCain. So that's what people need to realize. If they don't really support Barack Obama, support the party. And I think that's what you're doing. But when people deny you to speak freely, then they're denying you your democratic right to free speech.
Well, wait a minute. I'm confused on that last thing there about denying who?
Denying you your right to just speak freely and in your not totally supporting Barack Obama.
Well, no, I don't think that's the case, Pat. I think people are just vehemently opposed to the point of view that I have. The only place denial of free speech has any weight is if it is, a government denial of free speech. If people can deny me free speech every night just by turning off the radio. And that's perfectly okay. It's when the government says you may not say the following, Mike Malloy or whomever, that's when it becomes a constitutional issue. But I need to tell you something, Pat. I'm against right now the Democratic Party too, the way it's presently, the hands that it's presently in. This Democratic Leadership Conference that has had control of the Democratic Party since after Carter. And so I'm kind of down on the whole thing. I still retain the Democratic Party ideals as I knew them as a kid growing up. And I know they weren't
perfect. They've changed a lot.
Yeah, they sure have. I know they weren't perfect back then, but I think they were trying. And the Democrats now are not trying. They are just selling big chunks of their rear end to the highest bidder, just like the Republicans have done. So,
I am concerned with my vote for Barack Obama because the thing that worries me the most is that Lynn Cheney, don't anybody forget, Lynn Cheney got on national TV and told everybody that Barack Obama is distant kin to Dick Cheney.
Uh-huh.
So I feel like that was kind of a little warning shot there, a little, what do they call that, showing your card kind of a thing. There's a lot of trickery in politics, and I'm becoming more and more aware of it. And, you know, but still, I'm going to vote for the party. I want more Democrats to get elected. And while I have you on the phone, Mike, I want to ask you what your thoughts are. Did you read the email that Michael Moore sent out? On electing,
picking Caroline Kennedy as his running.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm open to any combination, any deviation from the standard horse hockey, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think Barack Obama is going to pick someone who his consultants say will give him balance or gravitas or foreign policy experience or whatever it is. But as far as Caroline Kennedy, I read Michael Moore's letter to his subscribers, and in a way, I guess it makes some kind of sense, but I think the whole thing is so rigged, and I think that's what Michael Moore was saying. Unrig it, Barack. Mm-hmm. Unrig it. Take somebody like Caroline Kennedy and have an Obama-Kennedy ticket, and as Michael Moore said at the end of that column, or at the end of that email that he sent out, those two names on the ticket would be probably unbeatable. Pat, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. All right, we have a break coming up here, folks. I may have made a mistake, too, on the Biden Clarence Thomas thing. Just got an email here from someone who says, no, I think you're wrong. If so, I'll correct it when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Malloy on the radio here. Nova M Radio Network, thanks for sticking around for hour two. Yeah, I had it wrong. Ron in Briarwood, New York has straightened me out. The person who guided Clarence Thomas through the confirmation process was John Danforth. Biden did not support Thomas and voted against him. The vote was 52-48. With 41 Republicans and 11 Democrats voting to confirm, Biden was not one of the 11 Democrats. And then in Biden's Wikipedia bio, it mentions, or no, not there, an article at Alternet that talks about, when was it, about a year ago, when Clarence Thomas was out on book tour with his book about how, his autobiography. And he talks about that Senate confirmation hearing, how he felt, Clarence Thomas felt, that Joe Biden, that the cross-examination of Clarence Thomas by Joe Biden was tantamount to the KKK assassination of Medgar Evers. So, yeah, I got it completely wrong. My bad. Thanks, Ron. John Danforth from Missouri, Republican, right? Or was he a Democrat? Oh, God, now I'm going to get that screwed up. Okay, let's move right on. All right, we'll come to your phone calls in just a second. Yeah, well, it's Friday.
Friday? You do this all the time, Malloy. You couldn't find your ass in both hands, boy.
Pat Buchanan writes today, who is Randy Schuneman? He's the principal foreign policy advisor to John McCain. And potential successor to Henry Kissinger and Zbigniew Brzezinski as National Security Advisor to the President of the United States. But Randy Schuneman has another identity, another role, not just foreign policy advisor John McCain. He's a dual loyalist, a foreign agent whose assignment is to get America committed to spilling the blood of her sons for client regimes who have made this moral mercenary a rich man. Woo! Buchanan goes on, from January 2007 to March 2008, the McCain campaign paid Schuneman $70,000 pocket change compared to the $300,000 his Orion Strategies banked in those same 15 months from the Georgian regime of Mikhail Saakashvili. What were Mikhail's marching orders to Tbilisi's man in Washington, Mr. Schuneman, get Georgia a NATO war guarantee. Get America committed to fight Russia if necessary on behalf of Georgia. Schuneman came close to succeeding. Had he done so, U.S. soldiers and Marines from Idaho and West Virginia would be killing Russians in the Caucasus and dying to protect Schuneman's client, who launched this idiotic war the night of August 7th. That people like Schuneman hire themselves out to put American lives on the line for their clients is a classic corruption of American democracy. U.S. backing for his campaign to retrieve his lost provinces is what Shashkavili paid Schuneman to produce. But why should Americans fight Russians to force 70,000 South Ossetians back into the custody of a regime they detest? Why not let the South Ossetians decide their own future in free elections? Not only is the folly of the Bush interventionist foreign policy on display in the Caucasus, so too is its manifest incoherence. And he goes on, Buchanan goes on, and you can find this at, where can you find this? Just, the title is And None Dare Call It Treason by Pat Buchanan. Just Google it, it'll pop right up. You ought to read this. You ought to read this, because like I say, yes, we all know that Buchanan is an ultra-right-wing nationalist nativist and is truly an anti-Semitic bigot. I mean, he really is. He really, Pat Buchanan, really. he's one of those Catholics. What was that Catholic organization, Kathy, that real Opus Dei. He's an Opus Dei Catholic. And in that regard, he really doesn't care too much for anyone other than other Opus Dei Catholics, like Fat Tony Scalia on the Supreme Court is an Opus Dei Catholic. They're the ones that believe in lots and lots and lots of suffering as long as it's not their own. But the masses should suffer because, you know, when they die and go to heaven, everything will be okay. That's simplifying Opus Dei massively, but they believe in utter and absolute obedience to the church, no matter what the Church of Rome, no matter what the Church of Rome says to do. Utter, absolute obedience. Denial of pleasure. Almost a celebration of pain. Weird people, as far as I'm concerned. So you can read it. None Dare Call It Treason. It's not the book, None Dare Call It Treason. It was written by the Birch Society back in the, when was that, in the 50s? And None Dare Call It Treason by Pat Buchanan. It's out there today. You ought to read it to find out. Just, you know, McCain really does put in sharp relief this phrase, voting for the lesser of two evils. There is no question. No question Barack Obama is the lesser of two corporatists, I wouldn't even call Obama evil. I don't think he's evil. I really don't. He's just not a Democrat, and he's damn sure not a liberal. I don't know what he is. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it just doesn't. But McCain, what a son of a bitch this guy is, and his old lady, and her family, all of them. I mean, this is really bizarre. Really bizarre. Wasn't McCain who said he had nothing but utter contempt for lobbyists. He would never have lobbyists involved in his administration. Was it his campaign? Turns out practically every single person in his campaign is a lobbyist. He is a liar. He's just an he makes George Bush almost look like a redeemed a Democrat. It's incredible. McCain is so bad. So read it. Read it. And None Dare Call It Treason by Pat Buchanan. It's out there. It's worth the 0.67 seconds it'll take Google to find it for you. Okay. Also, a little bit later tonight, a piece by Mikhail Gorbachev, a follow-up to what he wrote a couple of weeks ago. We have two open lines. The number is 800-989-1480, and we are trying to do a lot of calls tonight, so join us. Sue is calling from Calgary, Canada, listening on the internet. Hey, Sue.
Hi, how are you, love?
Just fine. How are you?
Good. You kind of circumvented what I was going to ask you, because you were really against Biden. That's when I put on the internet. and then you turn around and read the stuff that he didn't have the vote that you thought he had.
Right, right.
Okay. But I'm wondering, if it isn't Biden that you like, who would it be?
I don't know, because in order to think that way, I've got to accept the idea that I'm in support, active support, not in default support, but active support of an Obama plus somebody ticket. And I'm just not. I just really feel betrayed, and I shouldn't. I shouldn't feel that Barack Obama betrayed me from his campaign to once he secured the nomination, because it was me. It was so many people who thought they heard something from Barack Obama that just wasn't there. All the people that looked at him as, oh, my God, here's a fresh face who is a liberal who really does believe in change. I'd like somebody to point out to me where the change is. Everything that he has done so far since he got the nomination has pretty much reversed his positions during the campaign.
Right.
And pointed out the fact that he's just another Republican light. He's another Bill Clinton. So, you know, as far as his partner on the ticket, I don't know, Sue. I have no idea. I haven't even given any thought. Joe Biden is known here in the States as the man who voted to make it even harder for Americans who are in utter financial meltdown to file bankruptcy. Joe Biden is a champion of the credit card companies that charge 22, 23, 24, 28% interest, not the people that feel like they have to use them. Hold on, Sue. Let me do a break and I'll come back. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Yes, she does. And if somebody loved me like she do me, who she do me? Yes, she does.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Hey, little sister, what have you done?
21 past the hour. Sister, back to Sue, who called in from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Hey, Sue.
Hi, Mike.
All right, where were we?
I was just asking you about, if not Biden, then who would
you
pick?
Yeah, and I don't have, I just don't have a pick. I really don't.
And I can understand that. I think your Democratic Party has let you all down from when Pelosi turned around and said there is no impeachment on the table.
Right.
I think it started there, and I think you guys had great hopes of stuff that was going to come, and it didn't come after they got in power in 2006. And I think you guys were terribly betrayed, and I don't understand why.
I would imagine the reason why we've been betrayed by the Democratic Party is those of us who thought things would change if we somehow got the Democrats back in power in 2006, we were stupid and blind into believing that the Democratic Party still stood for something that was different from what the Republican Party stood for at the core level. I'm not denying that the Democratic Party has some differences with the Republican Party on in the margins, as they say. But the core belief of both parties is this neoliberalism that says the free market should prevail and that democracy should be forced down people's throats, and that any sort of government that we perceive as being counter to democratic principles, even if it is a government based on tribalism that's been around for 2,000 years, that we should work to defeat it either militarily or economically. That is neoliberalism. We talk a lot on this program about neoconservatism, which is nothing more than an updated brand of Nazism. But neoliberalism dictates that free markets should reign, and if societies are decimated and villages are emptied and people die and children starve to death because their parents can no longer get work, well, it'll all come out eventually. And it doesn't all come out eventually. It all stinks eventually. So I think what happened to a lot of us liberal Democrats in this country is that we finally have realized, and I guess we came out of the ether at the 2006 election, although we should have come out of the ether a long time ago. But I think with such a criminal administration as we've had,
yep.
And to elect Democrats specifically, for some of us, we gave them the power so they could remove this bastard. And if not remove him, I don't mean remove him, because there's not enough votes in the Senate to remove this criminal. But it was still open for impeachment hearings. So there would be a record that the American people, through its elected representatives, tried to remove him from office. And now that record will never be there. And all history will look at Americans in much the same way they looked at other societies that allowed totalitarian dictators.
Like you wanted it, like you were part and parcel with it.
Right, exactly. Like we agreed.
And I think they did you a disservice in that.
I do too. And I think a lot of Democrats feel the same way. But most of the world does not take the time to think about whether or not our elections were stolen. What they look at is how could these Americans elect this regime twice. They don't look at the decision by the Supreme Court to stop the vote counting in Florida, which would have denied George Bush his phony win. Most people around the world don't look at that.
But they don't even look at 2004 and how that one was stolen as well.
Right. They can't figure out how a country that started out 232 years ago with such lofty goals has allowed itself to sink into a mess where we actually have, as a president and vice president, two genuine, bona fide war criminals.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's hell.
And they look at you guys and they're thinking, oh, what a bunch of bloody jackasses. And it's not that at all. I'm sorry, because they don't understand how deep the criminality goes.
That's right.
From the inception of the election. That's only the beginning, and then the rest of the crimes perpetrated came after that.
I hear you.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And I understand what you're saying about the two parties, not which one's the better, which one's the less criminal, because in Canada here, if you ask me, the Liberals and the Conservatives, my feeling is flip the coin.
Mm.
It's the flip side of the same coin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's what it's
called. Our Conservatives were bought and paid for by Ralph Reed.
Yeah.
When
I know.
Tell people that, they're like, in here in Alberta, it's very Bible Belt, and being an atheist, it's kind of on the downside for me. But when I point out that Ralph Reed bought and paid for the Conservatives here, they're like, that's no way. And I said, well, yeah, Martin, our other criminal on the left.
Well, it's probably hard for a lot of these people to really understand who Ralph Reed was. Sue, I have to leave it there. Thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. Thanks for calling in from Alberta. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Before the hour. All right, email here from James in Kenosha, Wisconsin, regarding the Michael Moore letter or email that was at his website and went out to some of his subscribers, I guess. I'm not sure how that works. But, hi, Mike, I didn't receive the Michael Moore email which you referenced, but based on your summation, I'd say the underlying message sums up the broken system we call our democracy. That being that those two names, Obama and Kennedy, on the ballot would be unbeatable. That's it right there, James writes. A decision akin to the first round draft picks in professional sports. It's not a question of policy, loyalty to progressive interests, or any issue at all. It's about winning. If we do that, the rest will sort itself out. You know, like the rapid fall of Baghdad, everything just fell into place. Well, it fell someplace, didn't it? No doubt the poor and working class will be showered with chocolates and flowers. I mean, those two marquee names are Democrats, right? But make your case, folks. Take a look at the record of the democratically controlled Congress and tell me about the importance of supporting the party. I'd like to hear your take on the Green Party ticket if you feel so inclined. James, well, the truth is, James, I don't know what the Green Party ticket is right now. I have no earthly idea. Is that the one that Cynthia McKinney... is at the top of the ticket. I think it is. I don't know who her running mate is. Like most Americans, I guess, I'm focused on the Democrats and Republicans. On the other hand, I really do believe that at this point, if... and I hate to say this, I really do, because it's just a massive cop-out on my part, but... I might as well say it because it's how this program works right now. If I were to focus on anything other than the Democrats and the Republicans, I think a lot of people would just tune out and just say, well, there he goes again, talking about Cynthia McKinney. There he goes again, talking about Ralph Nader or the Greens or the Independents or this or that or you know, what have you. So I'm not sure how to reconcile that with what I believe to be I'm not sure how to reconcile what I just said with what I believe to be the real seriousness of the fact that both parties are pretty much the same, except in the margins, like I mentioned. I understand the fear, I guess that's the right word, in the minds of most people who are terrified to take a chance and vote for a candidate, you know, the Democrats, who are terrified of taking a chance and voting for someone other than the corporate Democrat. No matter who the corporate Democrat is, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't make any difference. You know, just whoever that Democrat might be or have been, if it would have been Hillary, if it would have been Biden, if it would have been who it is, Obama. So many Democrats, probably 95% of Democrats, I'm just picking the figure off the top of my head, are terrified to abandon the party in the presidential election and vote for that candidate that really, 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 really represents what the Democratic voter wants. I can't think of a single Democratic voter, I mean real Democrat, core Democrat, that doesn't want single-payer health care. We all do. I can't think of a single Democrat, a core Democrat, who doesn't want us immediately out of Iraq and never to have gone in to begin with. We do. We believe that. I can't think of a single Democratic, core Democrat, who doesn't believe that the environment should be clean, that global climate change should be dealt with, that alternative sources of energy should be tackled. And then you get into the peripheral issues. I don't think there is a single core Democrat who doesn't believe that a woman's right to privacy is hers and should be left alone. That gay folk, if they want to get married or if they want to stand on each other's heads, that's nobody's business. You know, for the religious right to inject itself into marriage, marriage might be sanctified by certain religious beliefs if you want to have it sanctified, but your license to get married doesn't come from any goddamn religion. It comes from the county courthouse. That's where it comes from. It's a state-sanctioned institution, and the state is supposed to be religion neutral. When you go in to get your marriage license, they don't ask you what your religion is. So all of these issues, these are all core Democrat issues. And then if you take a look at the policies or the expected policies, the stated policies, the expectations of these various candidates, you will find that Nader or McKinney or you know, again, I have to plead ignorance. I don't know who else is out there running as a real Democrat, although they have to disguise it and say, well, I'm a Green, or well, I'm an Independent, or well, I'm a Peace and Freedom Party, or well, I'm this, I'm that, because the Democrats have a lock on this nonsense. But if you take a look at what those candidates represent, what they say they represent, and what their records demonstrate they represent, then you have to vote for them, except for one thing. Fear. Absolute, utter fear. How many times, I cannot tell you, how many times in the past three presidential elections that I've heard people say on this program or in emails, well, Mike, yeah, you're right, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I'm sorry, I can't, you know, I'm afraid of throwing away my vote. What did Dennis Kucinich say? If everybody who is afraid of throwing away their vote, if they voted for him, actually voted for him, he probably would be the Democratic Party nominee, right? You see how that works? So, fear. Fear pervades everything. People are terrified. Terrified of booger bears are going to attack us. Terrorists are going to attack us. What are they talking about now? Department of Homeland Security is suggesting, I guess this applies to Denver, to the convention coming up, that the terrorists might get in there and clone. How do you like that term? Clone rescue vehicles, ambulances, police cars, and they might really be full of explosives. The sons of bitches want us to be terrified of our EMS people now. They want us to be terrified of ambulance drivers. Son of a bitch. I mean, it just never stops, does it? So the Republicans want to inject horror and fear throughout society because that's the easiest way to control a society. Hermann Göring made that very clear 70 years ago. And the average Democrat who doesn't want to buy into that fear has his or her own fear going, oh, Jesus, I can't, you know, I'm terrified of voting for Ralph Nader. I can't do that. No, I can't do that. I got to vote for Obama. I got to vote for Obama. Because if I vote for Ralph Nader, I'm throwing away my vote. If I vote for Cynthia McKinney, I'm just throwing away my vote. If I write in the candidate, I'm just throwing it away. Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. But surely we Democrats see what we're doing when we say that. Come on. Come on. Come on. Of course we do. And I'm just, you know, I know Democrats who have reached a point where, you know, in their political evolution, they've just said, okay, all my life I voted Democrat. And for the most part, it was okay. And then it started to change about 25, 30 years ago with the advent of the DLC and the corporatization of America, the absolute utter takeover of this country by corporate America. It's not ours anymore, folks. We could get it back. There's still, like I said the other night, the window's still open just a tad to get it back, but I don't think we're going to. I think it's sliding right into corporatism, which is a polite way of saying, or a non-threatening way of saying fascism. We're 95% of the way there as it stands right now. So, but I you know, I know a lot of Democrats who've said, you know, I've tried and tried and tried and tried to reconcile my votes over the past three or four or five presidential elections when I voted for the Democrat, and I can't do it anymore. I am sick of picking the lesser of two evils. I am sick of compromising my own values. I am sick of walking into the booth and voting for the D candidate because I know I have to, and walking out of the booth feeling just a little bit dirty, just a little bit like, ah, damn, that's not, oh, I wish I had somebody else to vote for. Well, we do. It's just that that person doesn't have a D after their name. That's all. That's all. So, you know, for all this Sturm and Drang that has been kicked up about, you know, me sitting here saying, give it to McCain and have a veto-proof Democratic House and Senate, you know, and all you people who are just out of your minds with rage, first the Hillary supporters, then the Obama supporters, because, you know, I'm just not going along with the program here. You know, what can I tell you? I understand where you're coming from. You're terrified. And I understand the terror. I really do. But you are voting from a position of fear. Very simply. And so have I. And I may do it again this year. But goddammit, let's call it what it is. You're not voting your values if you vote for Barack Obama, and you know you're not. And neither am I. So let's cut the crap. That's what I've been saying. I'm not anti-Obama. I'm not anti-Hillary. I'm anti the BS. These are not Democrats. So why don't we just step up, be adults, and say, yeah, I'm voting for Barack Obama because I'm afraid to vote for the candidate who is offering what I really, really want. Why don't we do that?
Go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small. And the ones that mother gives you.
Isn't that the way you feel? I mean, I feel that way sometimes. Right? The ones your mother gives you, the ones the Democratic Party gives us, don't do anything at all. I mean, nothing. William in Hollywood writes, Mike, I can understand the fear Democrats have about voting for a Green Party candidate or Nader. Yet still, if it's change people are really looking for, we now know damn well the Democrats have not only let us down and lied to us and left a trail of proof they have no interest in representing our interests. Then we will not have real change, but just more of the same. So we should have fear of continuing on with exactly what we have now, which is my fear, William. Yeah, it's very hard to break out of that, though. It's something I've been trying to break out of for I don't know how many, maybe the past three elections. Well, no, I guess that's right. I guess presidential elections. Because I was an ardent Clinton supporter back in 92, but even so, you know, once again, I took a look at what the alternative was. Another goddamn criminal, George Herbert Walker Bush, who was pardoning criminals left and right from the Iran-Contra years that nobody even talks to, nobody knows about, nobody cares about anymore. 250,000 dead people in Central America as a result of our actions down there. And so many of the people that are now corrupting the rest of the world, got their experience working in Central America, committing mass murder, engineering mass murder, setting up death camps and torture rooms. Jesus, you know, this is nothing new. Does anyone think that just because we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan and started renditioning people and stealing people and kidnapping people, that started it? I have news for you folks. The crop of Bushies who have been doing this murderous mayhem, the ones really engineering it, cut their teeth in Central America back in the 80s. So sure, I understand the fear because it's my fear. It's absolutely my fear. I know I get emails from people who say, well, you know, you set yourself up, Malloy, as some kind of a holier than thou. You're just a pure Democrat, you know, and you just bitch and yell at us and scream at us. And, you know, what kind of radio host are you? And my answer to that is if that's how I come across, I don't mean to. I thought I was pretty clear about my terror. Is just as great or greater than the average listener of this program. Why? Because I'm immersed in this garbage. That's what I do for a living. You know, I don't go do something else and half an hour before showtime, I sit down and go, oh, what am I going to talk about? It's not how it works. So, you know, I'll put myself right in the front of the parade of cowards. Here I am. Hello, my name's Mike Malloy. No. Hi, my name's Mike, and I'm a coward. Hi, Mike. It's like going to an AA meeting, I would imagine. So, I have no desire to, pistol whip somebody into giving up their support of Barack Obama, but I will damn sure sit here and point out the obvious. And if somebody wants to try to convince me that Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or Bill Clinton were liberals, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to sit there and go, oh, yes, well, thank you, caller. You're absolutely right. Or am I supposed to sit here and say, well, maybe a liberal, but maybe not. Or, you know, as far as I'm concerned, what I'm supposed to do, because I have to live with myself, is sit here and say, no, they're not. They're Republican light. Are we going to do it again? Are we going to do it again? And the answer is yes. Of course we are. Absolutely. You betcha. I certainly hope that between the two, Barack Obama and John McCain, that Barack Obama is the next president of the United States. You're damn right I do. I absolutely hope he is. And you know what? If Hillary Clinton would have won the nomination, I said it before, I would have voted for her. Absolutely. If it's between Hillary and McCain, absolutely. And the whole time I'm saying that and thinking that, I'm thinking to myself, but this Democratic candidate is not going to do anything in your interests, Malloy. You're doing it again, aren't you? And then I get into full schizophrenic mode and say, yeah, I'm doing it again. But why? I don't know. It's because you're a coward. I am? Yes. You're afraid. Oh, well, what am I supposed to do about it? Well, stop being a coward. How do I do that? Vote for Nader, vote for McKinney. But my vote would be thrown away. Not necessarily. You don't know what's in the minds of 30 million other voters. Why not just do it? I can't. Why? Because I'm afraid. You're afraid? Of what? Getting what you want? No, I'm afraid that my vote will be thrown away and McCain will get it. McCain may get it anyway. Why not make a statement? A statement? Yeah, a statement to whom? To yourself. Oh, I get you. You want me to be honest with myself. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I can do that. But you're already doing it. I mean where it concerns actually walking into a voting booth. But you're already doing it. You have your little radio program every night and you sit there and do it. You mean you're going to say this stuff on your radio program? You're going to go vote Democrat? It's time for a break. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Seven minutes past the hour. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. All right, we're in the home stretch, Truth Seekers. During the break, two emails. First one is from Joanna, who writes in the subject line, "It's always the lesser of two evils." Mike, I agree. The Democrats in the Senate wimped out on the atrocious Republican Supreme Court nominations. However, if a Democrat is president, we will get Supreme Court nominees that we can live with. The idea of McCain nominating more Alitos, Robertses, Thomases, and Scalias and having them confirmed by the Senate is disastrous on top of 8 years of Bush. As a labor lawyer, I can tell you that since the president also nominates or appoints the heads of the National Labor Relations Board and other administrative agencies, EPA, FDA, FEMA, FCC, etc., not to mention the cabinet posts and federal court judges, it does matter if McCain or Obama is making those choices. In fact, it's even more important when the Congress won't stand its ground on these issues that will impact most Americans for decades to come. Joanna. But I think that kind of makes my case, Joanna. The president nominates these people. I realize there's some that he can appoint that can be confirmed without Senate confirmation. Not many. And certainly not the head of FEMA, the FCC, the FDA, EPA. A couple of those are cabinet positions now. And as far as federal court judges, every single one has to be confirmed by the Senate. So, and the Senate, under the control of the Democrats, have demonstrated to me, Joanna, and I would assume to you, since you're a labor lawyer, repeatedly, that they will not, they simply will not resist these nominations. Therefore, why are we to believe that a President Obama is going to nominate really, truly liberal people to run these positions? I realize that the argument can be made that I don't have a crystal ball either, so how do I know he won't? And I understand. I understand. That's cool. That's a good comeback. It's a good argument. How do I know he won't? I don't know he won't. Maybe Barack Obama, after having done one rabbit out of the hat on us already, coming across as a liberal who's interested in change during the primaries and immediately scurrying to the center once he secured the nomination for all intents and purposes, and demonstrating and scurrying to the center that he will vote with the Republicans whenever, I mean, this is the same triangulation that Bill Clinton put us through. It's the same thing that Hillary Clinton would have done, I would assume. So how do we know that Barack Obama is even going to nominate people who are not corporatists, people who are truly liberals? People who, because it's only a liberal who can be a Supreme Court justice. Do you understand what I mean by that? Only a liberal can really interpret the Constitution as it relates to the rights of individuals, which is all the Supreme Court is about, isn't it? There's nothing in the Constitution about the protection of corporations. It's all about individuals. And the rights of individuals. And it's also about overstepping the bounds of power. So how do we know that? If somebody else can think of a third function or a fourth or a 20th, educate me. But as far as I know, there's only two. Making sure that the government, the legislative and the executive branches operate within the framework of the Constitution. That's A or B. I don't know. The other one is protecting the rights. I guess this would be B. Protecting the rights of individuals who live in a country that has the Constitution. What else are they supposed to do, the Supreme Court? And then you take a look at the record of the Supreme Court in the past 25 years. I don't know, maybe 30. I don't know. So the argument, I understand the intellectual properties of your argument, Joanna. I really do. But all right, now this is from Judy. Mike, thank you for saying exactly what I think about voting or not voting for Obama. I think I will vote for him, but it is absolutely out of fear and nothing else. I thought we had something special after the Philadelphia speech, but between FISA, Brock's a position on FISA, offshore drilling, and his ignorant statements about Afghanistan, I know that I won't be voting my values. The level of BS is astonishing. It almost looks like Americans have integrated all those criminal policies into their everyday thoughts without any perspective as to what they mean, what the policies mean. Victory in Afghanistan? What does that mean? No one ever answers the question. Judy didn't yell in her email. I'm yelling. It's only about all about winning or not winning. Looks like, unfortunately, the banality of evil has entered our reality and seems to be here to stay. Thanks for the reminder. There is comfort in knowing that one is not alone. Judy. So, I guess that's kind of where we're at. And I really do, I want to say I apologize for the stance I take on some of these issues because I know they're uncomfortable. But aren't we, or have we already passed, the seminal moment in whether or not this country is going to survive as a republic, a democratic republic with representative government? Maybe we've already passed it. Maybe all you hear when you turn in this program is the proverbial or the literary tilting at windmills. It makes no difference. Shut up, Malloy. Talk about something else. Move on. It's already been decided, dude. Move on. Okay. That's a very clear possibility. But I just haven't quite gotten to that point yet, I guess, where I can just say, okay, let's pretend, you know. Let's vote for Obama. Come on, we got to. The future of the republic is at stake. Let's vote for Obama. When I know that that is not true. And you all vote with what you listen to on the hours that this program is on. If you think this is nonsense and garbage and horse hockey, then you don't listen. You find something else. I understand that. I completely understand that. And if you think that there is some merit in what is said on this program, not just by me, but by the callers, by our emailers, all these emails that I read, I probably read more emails than anybody else in talk radio. I don't know that to be true, but I'll bet I do. Because what some of you people write in is so clear, well-written. You know what I'm saying. Makes sense. Whether I agree with it or not, makes sense. So to the people who think, and it's very clear in some of these emails that, you know, I'm on some kind of an ego trip, just kicking Democrats' ass all night long just for the sheer sport of it, or denigrating people or calling people brain dead, and which I have done. Don't you understand that I'm certainly referencing myself first? Because my record is exactly the same. It's been a long time since I've been able to, if ever, since I've been able to sit down and have that little internal conversation you heard going on right before the break about political issues. I've always been pretty clear on what I believed, but was willing to compromise. Okay, okay, okay. Yeah, I'm a Democrat. Yeah, I believe in the union movement. Yeah, I believe in coalition building. Yeah, I believe in up from poverty. Yeah, I believe in justice. Yeah, I believe in empowering people. But God damn it, I'm going to vote for the Democrat, even though the Democrat believes in none of that. None of it. What is Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton's position on union membership? Hello? Crickets. Nothing. What is their position on single-payer health care? Hello? Nothing. Nothing. What's their position on the war?
Well, you know, we got to win or something. Or is that McCain? Or is it Obama? Or is it McCain? Or is it Obama?
Who knows?
ready for Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Twenty-one past the hour. I have an email here from, didn't sign his name or her name, from Barack Obama's website. His position on labor certainly reads as though it is pro-union. So rather than read everything here that was sent to me, because it is lengthy, go to Barack Obama's website and check out his position on labor. If it corresponds with you, your liberal position on union representation, then I guess he's your man on that particular issue. The problem I'm having right now, and this is maybe the problem a lot of liberal Democrats are having, those of us who take things at face value to begin with, is Barack Obama's rapid move to the center. All right, at his website, he takes a strong position on workers' rights. But what does that mean in terms of using the bully pulpit to lobby for workers' rights? Will he do it? Will he try to reinvigorate the union system in this country? I guess you just vote for him if you're so inclined and see what happens, right? As far as single-payer health care, no, he's not in favor of single-payer health care. Neither of the two leading Democrats were in favor of that to begin with, ever. So the best thing to do is to, as this emailer did, go to these various websites, go to the candidates' websites, find out their positions. If they're ambiguous, note that. If they're unambiguous and clear, note that and see what happens when your candidate wins the election. See if that candidate actually does what the candidate says will be done. I don't think Barack Obama's position on so many of these issues, the position that he took during the primary has held now that he's the presumptive nominee. He's had a couple of instances where he's made it very clear that change does not necessarily mean changing the policies of the U.S. government where it concerns spying, lying, war. So, I don't know. All right, back to your phone calls. Amy's been holding on forever. Amy is listening on KPOJ in Portland. Hey, Amy.
Hey, Michael.
I didn't know we were still carried in Portland, are we? Oh, yeah. That's right. I'm sorry. I'm thinking
KPOJ
of Sacramento.
KPOJ 620, yes.
I'm thinking of Sacramento. My bad.
We've stayed with you as much as we can.
I know.
And you wander around the countryside here.
And I appreciate it.
But I'm calling, I initially called to... I rant along with you. I want you to know that. As I listen to you on the radio, I'm ranting with you.
Oh, good.
You give voice to my conclusions.
Oh, yeah?
I've done my research. I mean, I do research. I read, you know, books and magazines and online. And I don't just look at what they say, but I look at who advises them. And I know that Barack Obama seems like he's on the left. But that's because the Bush crime syndicate is so far to the right.
Yeah, really, really.
You know, but I looked up, so while I was waiting here, I looked up, because I make notes. I have all these little notebooks. In February, The Nation, written by an article written by Max Fraser, mm-hmm. listed Obama's three main economists. David Cutler, who wants to incentivize health care. Jeffrey Liebman wants partial privatization of Social Security.
Uh-huh.
Austin Goolsbee, 20% increase to Social Security tax to create private accounts. They are considered centrist market economists. What does that mean? Market based solutions for social welfare issues.
Right.
What does that sound like to you? It sounds like corporations.
Yeah, it does.
Sounds like corporatists. Now, I live in Oregon, and I'm the Secretary of State, bless his heart, just certified the Peace Party. I'm guessing that's Ralph Nader. The spokesman for the Peace Party is a man named Greg Cifori, who's always been the state organizer for Ralph Nader.
Mm-hmm.
So I get a third choice.
Hey, can you hold on a second,
sure.
Amy? Because I got to do a break here. Let me put you on hold, and we'll come back after the break and finish this up. Amy has done exactly what we all should do. Don't just look at the candidates. Stated positions that are out there because the candidate is trying to win something. But take a look at who is advising, who is feeding the information to the candidate so that he or she can write these position papers. And above all else, compare the candidate's public statements with the statements of his or her advisors. And if they contradict each other, then listen to the alarm bells.
Primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. We're talking with Amy in Portland, Oregon. All right, where were we?
So my first one, my two things I was going to do. One, I get to vote for a third party.
Right.
And two is I'm going to support whatever progressive candidates there are out there that remain and progressive organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And progressive candidates like Christine, I mean, this is where we messed up. Christine Sigalas in Illinois, Nancy Skinner in Michigan. They ran on their own with no support from the DCCC or the DNC, because somebody else was, that was before.
That's right.
Howard Dean was in. They ran. They ran against incumbent, long-term incumbent Republicans. Christine Sigalas was running against Henry Hyde.
Right.
They came within four, they got 44-47% of the vote. So 2 years later, they're running again. And what does the DCCC that fronts for the DLC
mm-hmm.
in the guise of Rahm Emanuel do? They go out and find other candidates.
Right.
You have somebody who's been known in the district. They ran 2 years ago, and they've been working in the district.
But they're too liberal.
Too liberal. They were progressive, and they were probably anti-war.
Right.
And so, you know, those two women got taken out of the race because they didn't have enough money to go up against. I mean, they brought in a woman from out of district named Tammy Duckworth,
mm-hmm.
war veteran, lost two legs in her. I mean, I think she's probably a wonderful person.
Right.
But Christine Sigalas was there first, but they bring her in. They spend millions of dollars. Like I hear somewhere numbers between $3 and $5 million they pumped into that race.
Mm-hmm.
And she lost to a Republican. Thank you very much, Rahm Emanuel. That means the House. The Democratic majority in the House could have been larger if you hadn't have been so narrow-minded. And so if Rahm Emanuel, you know, takes another job in the corporate world, sooner than later would be good here.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're aware, and not that it matters, but Nancy Skinner is a personal friend of mine and
yeah.
Kathy's, has been for over a decade. And during her attempt to unseat that old bastard who so misrepresented the district in Michigan, Nancy and Kathy and Nancy and I would have long discussions, not strategy sessions at all, because she certainly had people who were advising her, but just bitch sessions where, mm-hmm. you know, you just call up and say, Jesus Christ, Malloy, I don't believe. This is what Nancy said. I don't believe that I'm getting zero support.
Right.
You know, she...
She lost to Nolenberg. I don't really know his name, right. By 4 points.
He only got
51.5% of the vote. A incumbent got 51.5% of the vote. And what does the DLC do? They went out and they got Gary Peters, a former state senator, lottery commissioner.
Right.
And they supported him. But you were saying that you talked to Nancy Skinner and she
didn't
get support?
Yeah, nothing. Nothing. Nancy was, you know, she would get involved in these voter contests just so that she would get the endorsement of organizations to so that people would perhaps send her 10 or 20 or 50 bucks. She spent so much time fundraising. Nancy Skinner could have been the representative from Nolenberg's district in Michigan had the DCCC supported her the way that you would expect a Democratic Party to support a progressive slash liberal candidate.
Right.
And they turned their backs on her. And Nancy has, I mean, she really took a hard hit on that one. And I kind of lost touch with her right now. I think, you know, she sent some emails to friends and said, you know, I am so upset by what happened. And she was. She was just so emotionally stressed out because her party would not support her.
Right.
And
they brought in somebody else who hadn't run in the race before.
It's awful. Hey, listen, Amy, I got to move on.
Hey, thanks, Michael.
All right. Thanks for checking in. I do appreciate it. And to our KPOJ listeners, I'm sorry. I was thinking of Sacramento. We used to have a great relationship in Sacramento, and that's all gone. Oh, well. Paula is calling from Bayonne, New Jersey, listening on the Internet. Hey, Paula.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm okay. How you feel like a little more fuel thrown onto this fire?
Absolutely.
Have you seen what's in store for the convention next week?
I have not.
All the God stuff?
Oh, no. Really? Really?
Well, the convention is going to begin on Sunday with an interfaith gathering.
Yeah?
Led by a minister, a rabbi, and a mom.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And every primetime session will begin with an invocation and will close with a benediction delivered by a different person of faith.
No, wait, this is the Democratic Convention?
This is the Democratic Convention.
Well.
Yeah, so my thinking is the kind of change we're going to get is the kind that you find under your sofa cushions.
That's the kind of change. Oh, why can't why can't they just leave religion out of it? My grandparents were such devout Baptists, and they did their my grandmother did her little church missionary work to sick and people who were housebound and so on and so forth. But she never did anything like this, and she was a very dedicated Christian. She really believed, bless her heart. But to her. And this is how I was brought up. Religion was supposed to be something that was private. It was between you and your Redeemer. It was between you and your concept of God. This public display, didn't Jesus say that this was not the way to do it?
He sure did. I was raised Catholic, and it was the same. It was a personal thing. It wasn't this crazy. People had a healthy relationship with their faith.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy. So I thought I'd add that.
Well, I didn't know that. I'm sure they're trying to out-God the Republican Party.
It sure as hell sounds like it. I just kind of while I was on hold, sort of happened upon this.
Oh wow!
There was an article in Newsweek about it in their religion section, and it's scary as hell.
They're going to open with a benediction and close with an invocation. Oh my God! I feel like I'm back in Sunday school.
Yeah, yeah. It's just crazy. It's really, really insane. And I've been like bouncing around just like you have. I've really been bouncing around just like you have. And, you know, I was thinking 4 years ago, I was so hopeful. I was so jazzed about the election.
Mm-hmm.
Quit smoking for 2 months before the election. I started again on November 3rd.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm like, you know what? I'm going to smoke twice as much.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? I just, you know, it's like, okay, we can have a strep throat or we can have flesh-eating disease. Well, obviously, when given the choice between those two things, you'll pick the strep throat, but
oh,
I really don't want either.
Have you decided how you're going to vote?
No, I haven't. I'm going to wait and see how things play out.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm not going to ask
you. I'm going to wait and see how things play out. Obviously, I'm like you. I mean, between Obama and McCain, I'd rather Obama win.
Right, between those two. But we do, in most states, there will be other choices. And and I want to make it clear to anyone who's listening tonight, when the election's over, I'm not going to ask people who call the program, regardless who wins, hey, how'd you vote? That's like, hey, do you believe in God? You know, I think what somebody does in the voting booth is similar to what someone does in the confessional. It's nobody else's business. It's just, you know, so I'm not going to say to people, remember what we talked about back in August? Oh, you voted for Obama, huh? Well, shame on you. You know, I'm not going to do that. I'm just absolutely not going to do that. So.
No, well, it's none of anybody's business
right,
anyway. And
exactly.
That's why we have the secret ballot. Nobody sees it except you
and believe
in a higher power and
Diebold. Nobody sees your ballot except you and the technicians at Diebold.
Exactly. And then they make a decision whether your vote actually gets cast or not.
Right,
so
right.
We really don't have much of a say. In a way, it's kind of liberating.
Well, you know, it's...
Diebold will take care of it for me.
Growing up, obviously, I had lots of friends. Probably 80% of my friends were Catholic. And the Diebold has sort of taken over the powers that the priest used to have. My Catholic friends would come out of confession on Wednesday nights and we'd all hang out on the street corner, and they were all liberated. You know, I'm talking when we were 12, 13, 14 years old. They were all free of their sins for another week, and the priest decided what was going to happen. Okay, the priest identified it as a mortal sin or a venial sin. The priest decided what how many Hail Marys or Our Fathers you had to say. And it's kind of like Diebold now. Diebold decides, okay, does this vote really go to the Democrat? No, let's put it over here with the Republican. So it's kind of like Diebold has entered into the priesthood of voting or something. I don't know where I was going with that, but it didn't make any sense. Oh, well, to hell with it.
No, I totally get what you're saying.
Good.
All right. Our Lady of the voting booth.
Our Lady of the voting booth. Yeah.
Our Lady of the paperless voting machine.
That's it. All right, Paul, I got to move on. Thanks.
Have a great weekend, Mike.
All right, you too. Take care. All right, quick break. We'll be back. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy.
All things and what they used to be, oil wasted on the oceans and upon high seas. Fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy, me. All things and what they used to be. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby by night. Oh, mercy, mercy, me. All things and what they used to be. What about this over?
Ain't no doubt you're the gonna come out the way for the sun to go down. You can't hide from your demons. Feel them all looking around. You're running scared cause you know they're out there the way for the sun to go down.
Ten before the hour. Thanks, everybody, this week. Program engineered every night by Ian Huff, who also answers your calls. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch, podcast manager. Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. The program's ethical advisors are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, and the executive producer is Kathy Bay. Email from Jack, who writes, good evening, Mike. The local ABC affiliate here in Philadelphia reported tonight that the Secret Service has been dispatched to Joe Biden's home. What does all this mean? Perhaps he is the one Obama has chosen as his VP. Big freaking deal, right? It's all part of this phony left-right paradigm. But also keep in mind, Mike, that it was Joe Biden who has offered to send $1 billion in aid to the former Soviet Republic of Georgia. Why are we even in Georgia in the first place? I'm sure Biden will explain this all to us once he becomes vice president. But don't hold your breath, Jack. I'm just taking Jack's word for that. I didn't know Biden. I'm not surprised that Biden offered to send $1 billion in aid to the Republic of Georgia, which is kind of odd since they are the ones who committed the act of aggression against the so-called breakaway Republic of Ossetia, South Ossetia, when the Serbs did this in Kosovo. We responded by bombing the hell out of the Serbs. When the Georgians do it, we rush to their aid. Go figure. Not hard to figure out. Not hard to figure it out at all. The Serbs, for whatever their goodness or badness is, the Serbs were allies of Russia. To hell with that. That is so old. And that was another one of those episodes in recent U.S. military adventurism that very few Americans understand anyway. I mean, you tell me the difference between a Bosnian Serb and Radovan Karadzic or whatever the hell his name is. You know, you can't. And neither can I. Back to your phone calls. Mike is calling from Westminster, South Carolina.
Hey, Mike. How's it going, buddy? Been a long time since I talked to you.
Yeah, yeah. Hey.
You know, it doesn't matter, you know, how the conversation ends up. I've listened to your show since you went to Air America way back when and followed
oh my
KPHX.
God.
And
thank you. I appreciate that.
We've been together a long time.
We have indeed.
I respect, you know, your opinion, whatever, even if it differs from mine. And in this case, I think it does.
Uh-huh.
And I'm talking about, you know, when you say we need to fill up the Congress with veto-proof majorities in the House and Senate, and then, you know, let McCain have the presidency. Mm-hmm. I mean, I listened to what Amy was saying a while ago about, you know, Obama's, you know, picks for his economic advisors. But do you know who John McCain's economic advisors are? That's the question. Because in the final analysis, when it comes down to it, and I've fought this battle over at Common Dreams with the lesser evilists over there, that you know, you have to understand that there's really only two choices when it comes down to this election, and it's Obama and McCain. Now, if McCain gets in there, okay, he's not only going to, you know, forget the Supreme Court justices, because you've been over that and over that,
right,
but he's going to appoint the heads of all these agencies, including, you know, FEMA and OSHA and all the rest of them, including the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, which makes sure that none of these agencies can do anything, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be the guy in charge of doing all that if he's the one.
Now, do those offices not require Senate confirmation?
Well, you know, FEMA used to be a cabinet position, but now it's under Homeland Security.
Right.
So it's not. Almost all of these agencies, he can appoint these people just like he does the attorney generals. You remember the attorney generals and all the ones in the state that he put in? You remember the lawyer gate and all
right,
that.
Right. Well, that's certainly true, although the U.S. attorney general, all these cabinet positions have to be confirmed.
The U.S. attorney general does have to be confirmed.
Right.
But all the ones in the states don't.
Right. Okay. So what you're saying is, yeah, it's the lesser two evils.
It is the lesser two evils. Now, I grant you that. But, you know, almost every choice we make in life is a lesser of two evils choice, one way or another. But the fact of the matter is, there's no third party that has any chance at all of winning anything. And so what you've got is who do you want to be in charge when the Executive Order 51 is implemented? Do you want Obama to be there when everything crashes, or do you want McCain to be there when everything crashes?
But are you saying that a President Obama would initiate a Directive 51?
Well, he certainly has the
ability
to.
If either McCain or Obama were to put in play Presidential Directive 51, then I think that proves that both of them are Nazis.
Well, now see, that's what I'm saying, though. See, I mean, Obama has the ability to do it just like McCain would, but you know McCain would. I mean, is there any question in your mind that McCain would?
Let me ask
you one more question, Mike.
Given the right circumstances, I'm sure he would. But, you know, like I've been saying, do you believe that on his first day as President of the United States, Barack Obama is going to issue directives to rescind all of these horrible Nazi-like directives that Bush has put into play? If he doesn't, then he's the same as Bush.
Well, neither one of us know the answer to that question.
Well, that's true.
And that's true. A fact. But you have to admit, Mike, I mean, you and I have been, we've been through this together. In fact, I called you earlier and told you that we were being played by good cop, bad cop by the Democrats and Republicans way back when in 2004. I said, if you want it to crash, we can make it crash. Just get everybody to stop shopping, take the money out of their 401ks, you know, stop, get out of the stock market. We could have had the crash then, but you don't want it, you know, under a McCain.
You know what, Mike? I hate to say this, pal, but we are flat out of time. I get your point, and I think people listening tonight got your point, and I thank you for calling in, really. We'll talk again. I'll see you all Monday, all right? Have a great weekend. Be careful. Take care, and keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Yeah, have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.